So the year is 1935, and the pilot in command is Sir Charles Kingsford Smith, and the navigator and co-pilot is PJ Taylor, and they are on board the Southern Cross, a Fokker trimotor flying between Australia and New Zealand. Then suddenly, the exhaust system on engine number 2, which is sitting right there, explodes, covering the front of the aircraft with shrapnel and taking out the propeller of engine number 3. They gun the throttle of engine number 1 and number 2, but still they're struggling to maintain their altitude. Then suddenly they notice that the oil pressure is starting to drop on engine number 1, and they are still 1,000 kilometres away from Australia. Now I'm on board this Southern Cross 2 replica to bring this story alive, and later today I'm also going to be flying it, bringing you more interesting footage. So there's going to be no AI in this video at all. Now I did say that this was a replica, so there's no spoilers as to what happened next. So otherwise, sit back and enjoy this incredible story.
I'm Paul Stewart, and I make videos about planes and some music. And more music. This includes onboard flights from around the world and guided tours through significant aircraft and museums. If you're into these types of videos, then please check out my channel and subscribe. And a huge thanks to the Haas Aviation Museum and Senior Project Engineer Jim Thurston for giving me access to this incredible piece of aviation history. Being able to film on board this airworthy Fokker trimotor replica of the original Southern Cross really helps bring the story to life. On the 15th of May 1935, Smithy, co-pilot and navigator Taylor, and radio operator John Stanage were on board this flight from Richmond in Sydney to New Plymouth in New Zealand. It was to be a special mail flight commemorating the Jubilee of King George V and Queen Mary. The aircraft was coming towards the end of its service and the components were aging. The day beforehand, repair work had been completed on engine number 2, but they had thought that it had been a success. The 3 crew, the mail and additional fuel were added ready for the flight. The 3 engines were powered up and they took off towards New Zealand and over the Tasman Sea, roughly a 2,000 kilometer journey. Due to being so overweight, they could only maintain around 3,000 feet with a plan to fly higher as they burned fuel and lost weight. Around 6 hours after leaving Richmond, Taylor took over the controls, allowing Smithy a break, and while watching the sun rising from the east, he noticed a small spot on the starboard side of engine number 2's exhaust manifold that was brighter than the areas around it. Looking at the other 2 engines, he confirmed that it was not normal, but there wasn't much that he could do, so he kept flying while keeping a close eye on it for any changes. Smithy returned to the cockpit, and after a brief update, they both sat in horror as they watched that small spot grow, and eventually the pipe was blown open by the roaring flames inside. Shrapnel exploded into the airstream, and suddenly the whole plane jolted. Part of that manifold had been blown into engine number 3's prop, damaging it, and the whole engine was now unstable and vibrating severely. They had to cut the fuel to engine number 3, and the damage to the prop became evident once it came to a standstill. They had no time to ponder the situation as Smithy gunned engine number 1 and 2 to full throttle, but they were still unable to maintain their altitude and started a slow descent as Smithy quickly turned them around back to Australia. Although they were still over 800 kilometres away. Desperate to reduce their weight, Taylor and Stanage had to dump fuel, although quick calculations had to be completed to ensure that they'd still have enough to get home. Remain too heavy and they die. Run out of fuel and they die, as there was no dinghy or even life jackets on board. After reducing their supply down to only 300 gallons, a quick check of the altimeter revealed that they were at around 500 feet, but thankfully remained stable there. Luggage, tools, paperwork, all of that was thrown out, keeping only the crew, the fuel and the mail on board. Stanage radioed back to Australia about the perilous situation and rescue ships were prepared, but even then things were not looking good. Taylor attempted to clean engine number 3's prop with a hacksaw in the hope that it could be restarted, but it was a fruitless fighting against the blast of the airstream and the prop itself that would just move away as soon as he touched it, so that idea was canned. Now they had noticed some blue smoke from engine number 1, suggesting that it was burning more oil than usual. There were no measuring equipment inside the oil tanks, as oil consumption was usually pretty insignificant, but Taylor knew that it was an old engine being thrashed and the blue smoke was an ominous sign. Engine number 3 had plenty of unused oil, and peering over at it, Taylor started considering the idea of climbing out and transferring it across manually. The engine was too far away to reach over from the cockpit, so he'd have to step out and into the airstream. Looking down at that strut, he thought that he could step on it and then lean his shoulder on the wing's leading or forward edge and move his way out to the engine. It was a huge risk, as he could easily be blown off and into the water below without a parachute or life jacket, but he concluded that it could be done. Putting that idea on hold, he took over the flying to give Smithy a break and intently kept an eye on engine number one's oil pressure gauge. To his horror, it started to drop and continued to drop. Taylor updated Stanage to communicate the bad news and their coordinates back to Australia, and upon returning to the cockpit, he found Smithy removing his heavy flying boots, preparing to ditch. With a newfound urgency and desperation, Taylor decided that an oil transfer was the only option. Latching a mailbag line around his waist, which was probably more for moral support than any real safety measure, he stood on the pilot's seat and stuck his leg out the window and into the strut below. The center engine, number two, was at full throttle, pushing the air right into Taylor, while he inched his way out to the stricken engine number three, propping himself along the wing's leading edge. Using a wrench that Stanage passed out to him, he was able to remove part of the engine cowl and access the oil drain plug inside, all at roughly 60 knots and around 600 feet above the roaring Tasman Sea below. Stanage then passed out a thermos flask, which Taylor filled with oil, and then passed back for Stanage to pour that into the best container that they could find, which was his leather suitcase used to carry his radio equipment. Taylor returned to the cockpit, caught his breath, got a shock once again having looked at the oil pressure gauge, and then repeated the maneuver on the opposite side. Smithy got out into the right-hand seat to continue flying, and Taylor stepped out only to be forced back inside because the airstream from both the operational engine number one and two was just too much. Smithy realized this, and getting them up to around 700 feet, he dropped engine number one to idle and gave Taylor the go-ahead. By the time he got out to the engine, Smithy called out and told him to hang on. Looking down, to his horror, the Tasman Sea was only a few feet below, and they had lost all that altitude by dropping down to just the single engine number two. Taylor gave engine number one a bear hug, Smithy powered up, and they gained altitude. At a safe distance above the crashing waves below, engine number one was idled again, and Taylor opened up the cowl and Stanage passed out the oil. They lost about half of it during the transfer, but enough of it was still getting across and into the tank. Big smiles and a thumbs up shortly greeted Taylor as the gauges in the cockpit were starting to show the increased pressure. It had worked. Smithy signaled to hold on tight as he gunned the throttles as they had once again dropped to just a few feet above the water. Eventually they had enough altitude to idle engine number one again, allowing Taylor to get back across into the fuselage where he could have a well-earned rest. Calculating that only about half a gallon of oil had actually been transferred, after accounting all of that had been blown away, they realized that more trips out to both engines were required. After the second transfer, Smithy reluctantly ordered that they dump the mail overboard, as engine number one was starting to develop a misfire if they maintained full throttle for too long. They remained busy with the transfers, powering the engine up to gain altitude, and then idling it to allow both Taylor to move around, and also for the struggling engine number one to cool down. About 120 miles from Sydney, they spotted a rescue ship, Port Waikato, and considered ditching right next to it. While it would have saved Taylor from more dangerous trips outside of the fuselage, a gear-down landing on water was always going to be a big risk, so they decided to continue on to Sydney. As they burned through their fuel, their weight decreased, and the urgency to top up the oil was thankfully also decreased. But about 30 miles out, their oil pressure was again dropping to dangerous levels, so one final transfer had to be completed, and around 15 hours after leaving Sydney, Smithy touched down Southern Cross onto terra firma once again, with engine number one banging and smoking like a Holden V8, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a biased Ford man or anything, or maybe I am first on race day, etc. For his bravery, Taylor was awarded the Empire Gallantry Medal, and his distinguished aviation career continued, and in June 1939, he made the first flight across the Indian Ocean on board a consolidated flying boat called Guba 2 from Port Hedland in Western Australia onto Mombasa in Kenya. Taylor also flew the first flight across the South Pacific Ocean from Australia to Chile in South America on board the Catalina flying boat, the frigate Bird 2, and that aircraft is currently on display at the Haas Aviation Museum as well. He flew for both the Royal Australian Air Force and the British RAF during World War II and authored 8 books. Maintaining this aircraft as an airworthy tribute to the Southern Cross is an expensive process, and they are currently raising money to purchase a new engine, allowing them to fly further from the home base at Shell Harbour Airport just south of Sydney at the Haars Aviation Museum. If you're in a position where you could help financially, then please check out the details in the video description below. And please give the video a thumbs up if you enjoyed it, and check out my channel for many other similar videos, including a detailed look at this very aircraft. Thanks for watching.